And we're back. It is the Taylor Report, and it's CIUT 89.5 FM. And we're on Facebook / The Taylor Report and SoundCloud Taylor-Report. And I believe we have on the line Mr. Sid Ryan. Are you there, Sid?
I am indeed. Good afternoon. How are you?
Very well. And you were the former, you've been the president of the Ontario Federation of Labour and many years in the labour movement. Matter of fact, you are writing, have written a book. We want to make sure we say that. And when is that book going to be out?
It's going to be out on April 27th, 2019, just in time for May Day.
Excellent timing.
Yes, that's what I thought so.
So, Sid, you've been so many years in the labor movement, and you've been trying to, together with others, you struggle to make it an authentic labor movement that engages in socialist politics and such, and you're still in that battle, of course. There's a big one going on right now, and we want your thoughts about it. The lockout of IATSE, workers at the CNE. What's your first? What do you think of the situation and how we got into this?
Well, obviously, any lockout is always a concern. But you know, this particular lockout, it sounds like they're trying to break the union by essentially contracting out all of their work, and that's a real problem, particularly when they're bringing scabs from out of province across the line. I mean, that clearly tells you. This is a serious effort to break this union. So, I'm certainly hoping that. Well, first off, two things: the labor movement will not be crossing their picket lines come Labor Day, which is a huge windfall for the CNE on that particular day. My understanding now is that I just found out this afternoon that instead of marching to the CNE. The Labor Day parade will instead be marching to the Lamport Stadium,
which I think
is a really, really good decision because, you know, lots of people join in the Labor Day parade because they get in free to the CNE.
Yes.
So lots of those folks might still just go through the picket lines, and it would look like that Labor was crossing IATSE's picket lines, and I think that would be a disaster. So it's a good decision to take it to Lamport Stadium. And not run the risk of having a bit of a mistake being made by some people.
Yeah. Now, by the way, if they're not going to, at some point, labor itself in its thousands is going to have to go to Queen's Park, aren't they, and do something about this situation of using, let us say, what is it, replacement workers / scabs.
Yeah.
We had legislation in this province, and Quebec still does. Can you talk about how important this is?
Well, Bob Rae brought in the anti-scab legislation when he was in government in the 90s and 95 government. But Harris came in, and then within a couple of weeks of taking office, he had basically written that law off the books. So, so we don't have anti-scab legislation right now, but it is so crucial. It would actually... There wouldn't be a lockout at this moment in time, if we had anti-scab legislation. So I agree 1,000%. I don't understand why they're even marching up to Lamport Stadium. Like, why don't they politicize the Labor Day parade and turn it around and take it down to Queen's Park and have 30,000, 40,000 people on the lawns of Queen's Park protesting the policies of this conservative government?
Mm-hmm.
That, to me, is what they really should be doing, and there's a golden opportunity. I don't even know why we continue today to be marching up to the CNE.
Mm-hmm.
Really and truly, the Labor Day parades mm-hmm. should be a bit more political, and we should be talking about the issues of the day. And you don't really do that by heading into the CNE, I don't believe.
Yes.
And there's no opportunity with the current parade. There's no opportunity to have any political speeches either at the beginning or at the end.
Mm-hmm.
It makes a bit of a farce of the Labor Day parade, in my opinion.
Yeah. This is Sid Ryan, former president of the Ontario Federation of Labor. The steelworkers in Quebec, they've been raising an issue And I think, well, I guess it is a matter of legislation. I don't know if we had it here, but minimum wages and also protection of pensions, protection against the two-tiered wage system. Your thoughts about that?
Well, okay, so in this province, we just won the whole question about raising the minimum wage up to $14 an hour. But Ford is bringing in a piece of legislation, I understand, in September that's going to prevent that from going to $15 an hour. But I also understand that there may be, once you open up that section of the labor code, there's a possibility that he may go after right-to-work legislation he may very well be bringing in. We don't know at this stage. But in Quebec, in 2001, they actually passed legislation that made it illegal to negotiate two-tier wage systems, like the Unifor did here in Ontario, where the new hires into the auto plants are going to be earning $17 an hour, working beside people earning $30 an hour doing exactly the same job. He made that illegal in Quebec in 2001. And then just recently, they made it illegal to negotiate two-tier pension plans. That was a piece of legislation that came in just, I think it was last October. And the steelworkers were fighting for that on the picket lines. He had many big, long strikes, even had big strikes here in Ontario. But sadly, it is possible to negotiate two-tier pension plans. And indeed, Unifor went and did the same thing in the auto sector for new hires coming in. So basically, what it ends up doing is screwing younger workers. It means that they don't have a defined benefit pension plan. What they do have is a defined contribution, which is essentially a glorified savings plan. And then, of course, they have the two-tier wage system. So that's not good for younger workers or the next generation of workers facing that kind of a system. And the problem with it is it spreads to other workplaces and other sectors.
It's like a virus, isn't it? I mean, once it happens, the precedent becomes a weight against the other people.
Of course it is. I mean, and when a big union like Unifor says, we can't defend defined contribution benefit plans anymore. But then, you know, it says the smaller unions, then you're wasting your time, you know, trying to fight against this. For example, the entire public sector has defined benefit pension plans. So all of our universities, all of our schools, all of our hospitals, all, you know, we have, everybody in the public sector basically has got a defined benefit pension plan. It's now undermining the fight to keep those pension plans as defined benefit, because employers will be looking to the private sector and saying, huge segments of the private sector have given it up. Now it's time for you guys to give it up. And don't be in the least bit surprised if you start to see Doug Ford taking a look at the legislation around the defined benefit pension plan in the public sector and trying to do something along the lines of what the private sector have done.
Yeah. By the way, this underlines why I know you fought very hard against, as president of the OFL, against people who want to kind of depoliticize the efforts of unions. And there was a school of thought, and I noticed it kind of faded in the last election, but tried to say, well, we have to vote strategically. And so we'll pick out, which party or which candidate, totally confused their members.
Well, that's still very much alive. Even though in the last election, you know, on the surface, we didn't hear a lot about it, but you still had the teacher unions like the OFSTF and OECTA, and you had most of the building trades underneath Pat Dillon, all still basically voting strategically right up until the bitter end. Mm-hmm. And even Unifor were still strategically voting until it became clear that Kathleen Wynne didn't have a snowball's chance in hell of winning. So then halfway through the campaign, I understand they pulled some of their workers quietly off the Liberal campaigns and they put them onto the NDP campaigns. But you know, in the next federal election, which is coming up in 2019, you're going to have all those same players pushing strategic voting just as much as they did in years gone by. So we haven't heard the end of strategic voting, not by a long shot.
Yeah, that's this whole business of how to address management and the leadership of the country. I thought it was a rather dark day when the president of Unifor had that warm embrace with the new prime minister as though he was going to look after labor for us. that really hasn't worked out, and particularly in the auto sector, as far as I can see.
No, it hasn't. But are you talking about the Buzz Hargrove's embrace, or are you talking about Jerry Dyson's embrace?
Oh, yeah, which embrace? I'm sorry. Yeah, there's more than one couple.
Yeah, because they've done it. Both of them have done it. Uh-huh. And it has not. But, you know, in some respects, what it is, you know, they're currying favor with the Liberals, but then they go and they negotiate hundreds of millions of taxpayers' dollars to go into profitable corporations in the auto sector as an incentive to keep jobs here. So basically what they're doing is they toss the healthcare system and the education system underneath the bus, deprive them of you know, much-needed resources, and those tax breaks then go into these very profitable corporations. Mm. I mean, it's a sad state of affairs when you start to put, you know, pit one sector against another sector when it comes to dollars and that. I just don't understand that strategy, but I understand where they're coming from with their strategic voting. They obviously want to keep the Liberals elected because every time they go with a handout looking for tax breaks for the corporations. So they've got, you know, the corporations have the union in lobbying government to give them tax breaks. Like it's pretty sick.
Yes. We're speaking to Sid Ryan. Now, there's a crisis that you have been focused on. And by the way, are you there? I think I might have lost you.
No, I'm here.
Oh, okay. Now we've had the formal, this is something you've addressed, and I really hope people follow your writing on this subject, that is a Unifor decision to withdraw from the Canadian Labour Congress. This all began, I guess, in January of this year, and it's finally come to fruition in a formal way by Unifor about a week ago at their council leaving the CLC. Now, they, in my understanding of your view, is they should have, the CLC, OFL, and other labour bodies, their reaction should have been, well, you leave, you're gone. But they seem to have gone, but they're still around. Is there going to be a new chapter now that they've made it as official and clear and legal as possible?
Well, that was a sad day for labor when the leadership of Unifor convinced the rank and file leadership, if you will, to follow them down a blind alley when it comes to you know, raiding of other unions. And allegedly, you know, Unifor is really concerned about the democracy within international unions. It's just a phony war, to be honest, where Dias has wrapped himself in the Canadian flag in order to be able to go out and to raid. And to get his members to go along with that and say at the same time, we're going to withdraw our funding from the CLC, which is exactly what happened to me when I was the president of the OFL. And it just destroys the ability of the labor movement to be able to fight back. I mean, I lost 25% of my funding almost overnight, and I don't know what the percentage is of Unifor's money coming out, but it's probably around the 15 to 20% of the CLC's total budget, which is a major hit, and which means then we can't mount the kind of campaigns that we ought to be doing. But the signal it sends is that if you disagree with leadership of the central labor bodies, the way to punish them is to just unilaterally pull your funding out of them. It is so undemocratic and it's so autocratic that it just destroys the solidarity within the movement. But now you've got Unifor officially outside. It wasn't just Jerry Dyce pulling them out. He's managed to convince his Canadian council to follow suit. Mm-hmm. So when it gets to, you know, whether it be fight backs collectively fighting back against Doug Ford or whatever the case may be, we're divided. Like, you know, Unifor is going to show up on Labor Day. You'll have a few speeches on Nate Phillips Square. And instead of them marching with the rest of Labor, they'll be taken off and going somewhere else.
They're going to go on a cruise. They're taking a cruise.
I hear they're supposed to be going on a boat cruise, which is just, you know, unbelievable.
By the way, that doesn't bode well for down the road, right? When we need unity, people will be tangled up. Do I go to that rally? Do I go to this march?
Well, these leaders
can't meet each other because, in fact, it's defined as an antagonistic relationship.
Well, you know, like it was 2 years ago that Jerry Dyce called me out at a Labor Day parade of all times to basically say he wasn't going to be supporting me because he wanted to build unity within the labor movement, allegedly because there was four unions withdrawn their per capita, and they said that they wouldn't come back in unless I was gone. So he tossed his lot in with these scoundrels who withheld their money from the OFL. And here he is now, a year and a half, 2 years later, and what's he doing? He's doing exactly to the labor movement what he was complaining about, saying, oh, we need to put in Chris Buckley into the OFL so we can build unity. Well, I don't see an awful lot of unity right now within the labor movement when you've got Unifor leading this parade to go after and denigrate all the international unions that make up 50% of the labor movement.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's I know you've got Buckley, he's not even his own union, no longer belongs to the OFL. Same thing with Hassan Youssef. We both have fake memberships in other unions. It's a joke. It really is.
It's so important that people actually be representative when they say that they're representing a local or a union, that's true, rather than, here, I'll lend you my badge.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's make a joke of the process.
So what's going to happen next year when the CLC has a convention to elect a new leader, and the same thing with the OFL? Are these people going to stand up and say, elect me, but I'm not from Unifor, I'm with the school teachers now, and the other guy says I'm with PSAC? It makes a mockery of the structure. It makes a mockery of the constitution of both the OFL and the CLC. And again, the membership, the leaders of the major unions in the country had an opportunity to stand up and say this is wrong, and they acquiesced. They basically ducked the question, and rather than taking on this whole notion of having a fake membership in another union.
Yeah. It is really a matter of what leadership is supposed to be about. And the conduct of labor leaders is supposed to be exemplary and not shady and not opportunistic, but to show the way. And that isn't that's not what we have. We're speaking to Sid Ryan. In the moments that are remaining, I want to ask you again. You have a book, and it's called, I think it's The New Vision or The Vision.
No, it's called A Grander Vision.
So a Grander
what it
Vision.
Is, it's basically, it's almost like the history of the labor movement from the past 30 years, written by a labor leader. I didn't have a ghostwriter. I wrote it myself, and also I'm looking at...
You didn't have a replacement worker.
exactly, and there are... Workers need to be telling our own stories, and we need to be writing our own stories.
Yeah.
So I also look to the future. It isn't just about the past. That's why I call it a grander vision.
Speaking of the future, I think you and I are on the same wavelength because we started off here talking Labor Day is coming up. It's always been an awkward experience to go to a parade early in the morning when nobody sees us, and you go to the gate, and then they let you in free as though you were the hired help, and unorganized, by the way. And they say, oh, here's your little, I hate to use the word cheese, but it's your little reward. And a lot of labor people come from traditions that are a little more militant, and they don't really care to be taken to the Queen's Gate or Prince Gate or whatever it is. They'd like to do something that the whole city sees, and it is an expression of solidarity of labor. So how about we change it to the traditional International Day of Labor, which is May Day?
Hey, hallelujah. And that's what I've been at all my life. I don't understand why this Labor Day in September was selected by the employers. It wasn't selected by labor ourselves, and then they give it and make it a holiday. And now we're unable to break away from it. But I just don't understand why Canada and United States are the only two countries in the world that celebrate Labor Day in September when the entire world are celebrating it on May the 1st. I just don't get it.
Yeah.
Why we cannot be in line with the rest of workers around the world.
Yeah.
It is high time that we did it, and it's high time we politicized our Labor Day parade. We've even gotten to a point now where instead of having like a Labor Day parade, you've got picnics all over the place. So there's no real political message coming out of our Labor Day parade. And this, this is the sad state of affairs. If we just, forget about September, whenever it is, because you're dead right. I've marched in it for the last 35 years, and we're walking along Queen Street, and it's basically devoid of people because everybody's off at the cottage or they're off whatever. And so we're walking, marching through empty streets up to the CNA. No political message, no speeches. It's heartening, actually, is what it is.
Well, I think that tells us why we should look for your book, which will be out in time for May Day.
April 27, time for May Day.
I don't like to be subversive, but is it possible you could run for the president of the CLC?
I could, yeah. Stopping me. The only thing I will say that would be stopping me is there's an age restriction in that. It's not written in law, it's not constitutional, but it's there. You retire at age 65, and I've just passed age 65, so no. But you know what?
We could have a Respect for Seniors May Day.
Maybe. You got it.
And make you the president. Sid, yeah. It's a great pleasure to talk to you. Very
you
informative. Look forward to that book.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you for promoting it as well. Yep. Okay, so all the best. Okay. Bye-bye.
Same. Bye-bye.